Hello, everybody, and welcome to the second episode of the Silver's Cronies podcast. I am your host, James, and I'm joined by Jake and Steve, as always. This episode is brought to you by Ben Simmons Jumper, not reliable and will never be on time. Ben Simmons Jumper. We got some good stuff to talk about today. Going to talk about some news around the league and also the second round and some of the conference finals matchups.
Perfect. I like how you related Ben Simmons Jumper into that, because we are roughly a week late. We are almost already done with all the conference finals games, and here we are with our round two recap, which is very exciting.
So what game do we got first? What a matchup.
Jazz versus the Clippers.
Jazz Clippers, great series, great ending.
R.I.P. Bozo.
The ending everybody wanted. This was Vernon Maxwell's time to shine.
It really was. This was his moment. He's been manifesting this for months and months now. Shout out Vernon Maxwell.
This turned from what many thought would have been a very dark, basically a nightmare for many people, of a Utah Jazz finals appearance and potential victory.
I would have stopped watching basketball.
This was the good ending.
Yeah, this was.
This is what we all wanted to see.
The Clippers changed the narrative. They're no longer playoff chokers.
No, you know? No matter what happens. I mean, Playoff P really, he actually took his name finally from us.
Pandemic
he earned
P
his
dead.
Name.
Pandemic P is dead.
No, it's not dead. It's just with Porzingis now.
Yeah, it's with Porzingis now. He passed it down.
No, but it's good. It's good to see. We all know Rudy Gogert, as some may say, very bad performance.
Defensive Player of the Year got stopped by Terrence Mann.
Yeah, my ass.
I believe in Game Six it was 11 for 15 on shots the Clippers had when Gobert was the primary defender.
Well, and because what they did is they basically exposed the fact that he can only guard positions four through five, so they were hitting him on pick.
Do you know
and
who
rolls.
Can guard all five positions on the court?
Later.
Okay.
but
false deep.
So what they were doing was they were basically baiting him to come out, and then when he was coming out, they were attacking him. And since he can't guard Terrence Mann or Paul George really well, they were leaving the paint wide open, and they were getting easy buckets. And even when he was in there, it kind of looked weird, because even though the Rudy Gobert slander is real here on the Silver's Cronies podcast, he is a really good interior defender. But for some reason, he was just not doing anything.
And I think we know Draymond had the good quote about it after that series, talking about how, a lot of defenders, the problem is that there's always, no matter how good you are, there are very few that are never in an uncomfortable situation. And he was talking about how Gobert is one of those guys.
Shout out Wyatt, by the way, my dog.
Shout out to James, the dog.
Providing some background.
Gotta love Wyatt. But how Gobert, anytime he's on the perimeter, is extremely uncomfortable. I mean, that's what makes guys like Draymond, I mean, Simmons, as I'm sure we all know,
regardless
of the offense. Just guys like that can guard one through five that are never really going to be back down from anything. They're not going to be put in a bad situation. Well, Gobert is one of those guys, and he can't be brought out to the defender on the perimeter. And you can't keep playing drop coverage with him in the paint, and you just go around them. They'll get easy buckets.
And listen, I wanted to like the Jets. The players they have are very hard to, especially their depth pieces. It's hard to dislike guys like Joe Ingles and guys like Jordan Clarkson. Like, the way they were put together was very authentic, and I want to say
it was really weird,
dynamic.
Yeah,
because
we're living in a world where super teams and just people are just basically,
and you
want to
see them succeed.
Deals.
It's just that Utah.
Because they're the Utah Jazz. And everything that comes with being the Utah Jazz.
The biggest thing about this series is that, they weren't being necessarily beaten by stars. This wasn't, Kawhi Leonard takeover. I mean, of course we know. Paul George was, he obviously had a great series and he dropped his old nickname, but. They're getting beat by the likes of Terrence Mann in some of the later games.
I love
Reggie
Terrence
Jackson.
Mann.
Pat Beverly had a couple key threes in game six. I mean, they were just getting beat by role players, guys who honestly we didn't know how they'd fit with the Clippers. And then coming late in the playoffs, they're playing amazing. That's who they got beaten by.
Yeah.
It wasn't just them getting beaten by stars. It was them getting beaten by
all
guys
due respect,
who
the Clippers.
Yeah, they shouldn't have been getting beaten. Shouldn't have got beaten by them, but they did.
Yep. Shout out Clippers. They played really well. Zubac has been really weird for the Clippers,
Well, they didn't really. But I feel especially against Utah, if they saw that small ball was working well, And I feel like having Zubac against Gobert would have probably just clogged up.
Because Zubac can be really good depending
he's
on the situation.
He's good at time. Yeah, he's a very like situational type player. Like flash forward, you're seeing like in the Sun series
spoiler
right now.
Spoiler alert.
He's going like he's averaging double-double.
But now he's
I
out.
Think, every game.
Another guy who I'm very happy for, as you know. Steve is a Pistons fan. Reggie Jackson was great this series. He continued what he did from round one. I pull up his stats. Averaged 18 points, 4 assists on 58% from the field, 50% from three.
You're so proud.
He was just amazing. Yeah, he was a guy that many Pistons fans wanted to beat up at Applebee's. Not a joke. If you don't know this story, in the 18-19 season, he was going to have a meet and greet at an Applebee's and sign some autographs, take some pictures. And I'm not kidding you when I say there were fans on the app, on Twitter, who wanted to go there and said they were going to beat him up, that they were going to beat him up. And you know what? This is what I'm proud for because I did not want to beat Reggie Jackson up. Sure, he had his moments. We all know what Reggie Jackson was like in Detroit. We all know that experience. And it's good to see him succeeding and having and just being great for this Clippers offense, really helping carry them in the playoffs and helping them be where they are now.
And he was right. He is better than Westbrook.
He was right.
Yep.
Reggie Jackson was right. Let it be known.
Thank you, Rudy Gobert, for proving Reggie Jackson right. I'm actually right now trying to go back in my archives, otherwise known as my text messages, to see if there's any Reggie Jackson slander that
Steve
ever said.
There probably was.
Oh, for sure.
At times.
There was a point where you probably wanted to go.
I never wanted to beat the guy up, though.
At Applebee's.
Never. No. First off, I would enjoy a great meal at Applebee's. It's a fine establishment.
I want to talk about Donovan Mitchell before we wrap up on the Jazz, because he's weird because like he could be one of the most dynamic scorers in the league, but other times his inefficiency is almost like overwhelming.
Yeah, he's one of those players that, like, when he's on, he's one of the best in the league. But when he's off, it's just, like, hard to watch.
Yeah, and, you know,
I mean, I can't fault him for this Clippers series. I mean, he had 35 points a game. He shot
He did what he had to do.
He was kind of bad inside the paint. I think that he's probably just getting hammered in there. But he's still 45% from threes on 13 attempts a game from there.
I mean, and Gobert didn't help him out.
It kind of seemed like a lot of things that were happening was when he'd start driving, it would just be clogged. He'd be getting hammered in the paint. I mean, still from outside, he was very effective. He helped carry them. I mean, I'm not going to be mad about anything Mitchell's done. There are times, yeah, he can be inefficient, but I mean, I think he's also a great scorer. He's a great star.
Good question is, where do the Jazz go from here?
They really can't. They're kind of stuck. Their cap situation isn't great. We all know the massive extension that they gave to Gobert. It was 5 years, over $200 million. They're just kind of strapped.
You're going to basically have to hope for Mitchell to take that next step because Gobert is Gobert.
I don't think there's much more that Mitchell can do than
he
already has. He's already...
They're basically stuck in a position where, like, they have to trust their guys. But, like, can they really trust? Because they put together a team of really good players, but are they really good trustworthy players?
And as much as I want to, like, shit on the Jazz just because it's fun, like, Quinn Snyder's done a great job in building a culture there ever since, like, Gordon Hayward left.
Yeah.
I mean, the big problem with the Jazz here is they already have $134 million guaranteed next year. Mike Conley's coming off the books, which isn't very good. Obviously, he's their starting point guard.
It's going to be interesting if they sign him.
I mean, that's probably the only guy they can go after. Unless they wanted to find a trade with, like, Clarkson or Bogdanovich, they're going to have to – that's the only guy they can feasibly
retain.
Are
they kind of, like – because I feel like they're kind of making it so that, like, for the future, basically, Donovan Mitchell at point guard and Clarkson at shooting guard –
I mean, I don't
that
know.
That combination,
I don't,
or do you still want him off the bench?
I still think they'd want Conley just in general. Yeah. The other question is, do they want to be in the luxury tax? I mean, I assume that they probably were in it this year. And,
especially for, like, a small market.
And, yeah, and the repeater tax isn't something you want to be in. If you didn't know, basically, whenever you're in the luxury tax for years upon years, those penalties keep increasing. It's why the Warriors incurred, like, an $80 million penalty when they traded for Kelly Oubre this year. And, yeah, for a small market, that's not usually something you want to do. It's part of the reason why, like, the Harden trade from OKC happened way back in the day. So I bet they're going to make a lot of moves, whether it be just getting rid of Conley or trading a bunch of other guys for young assets or picks or whatever to try and get under that threshold. Yeah.
This is the in-depth analysis you can't find anywhere else because we are the only basketball podcast. And yeah, I want to say I do appreciate you.
And also, as of recently, not just a basketball podcast.
Yes, because it's our podcast. We can do what we want. No one's stopping us. And I do appreciate Steve being quick on his feet with a basketball reference.
Yeah, he does have the always phone do. Up and ready.
Yeah.
Always got to work basketball reference.
So, rest in piss, Jazz. Let's move on to Suns Nuggets. Personal shout out to Jokic. Rightfully so, won the MVP. Congratulations.
Actually, no.
Shut up.
Steph Curry.
How did he do in the playoffs?
Well, you know, technically he wasn't ever in the playoffs, so we can't know how he does in the playoffs.
That was the point. It's a joke. You're allowed
to. So, Suns. I really like the Phoenix Suns. They're just looking, like, honestly, unstoppable.
Apt observation right there.
Like,
let's just show that
before the Nets, spoiler alert, before the Nets got axed in the most bogus Game 7 performance I've ever seen in my entire life from a white dude who shoots threes named Joe Harris. The Nets were honestly looking like my lock for the win, especially after the Lakers went down with the injuries, but now it's basically the Jazz.
There's definitely a big team of destiny.
Not the Jazz, the Suns.
A big team of destiny vibes from the Suns.
Yeah.
I mean, everything's just fitting.
Perfectly.
Yeah, they're including the Suns and four guy. Who's become a living legend.
Suns and four.
I mean, yeah, their guys know what they're doing. I mean, Jay Crowder's playing amazing. I mean,
Bossman 99.
Ayton's taking the next level. And you just see all these guys are fitting. I mean,
and as Chris Paul said, he's going to get the bag.
Yeah, I mean, Bridges is fitting in. And Monty Williams is doing a great job for their team.
And can we talk about that Suns and four guy? Because imagine being the two dudes with, like, the matching fades and, like, I presume
jerseys.
The matching Jamal Murray jerseys. Like, they definitely had the mindset that they were going to go there. They were going to kind of post up, take some Instagram flicks.
Yeah.
You think they ever thought that a husky boy wearing no shirt and a Phoenix Suns jersey,
one of the best jerseys in NBA history, by the way,
would literally try to actually, like, would just absolutely rock their shit?
And not only did he rock their shit, he became a niche internet celebrity
while doing it.
Yeah.
And well, the biggest problem here and the biggest crime is the one Nuggets fan that actually engaged in fisticuffs here sucker punched him from the high ground and still lost,
which is phenomenal.
You can't listen. If you're gonna fight, you cannot do that. You cannot lose a fight from the high ground when you attempt to sucker punch a guy. And major props to the Suns and four guy for doing that, for being able to beat him even after being sucker punched and all that happening.
Yeah. Want to talk about what I have written down. Thank you, Garce, for that nugget of information. We'll have to take a brief break after we talk about the Suns to deal with a interruption. But Chris Paul, point guard. I talked about this yesterday with my brother. He hasn't won a championship. This is his first conference finals, I believe. He's going to go down as, like, one of the most, I don't know how to describe it, like, interesting players in NBA history. Cause, like,
definitely interesting.
Where does he rank among the all-time greats? I know you'd have a bone to pick with Isaiah Thomas and, like, Stockton and, like, Robertson.
He's definitely pleading his case. I think we're not going to know until it's all said and done. But, you know, I definitely think that he's pleading his case to be up in the top.
I was listening to or watching some videos earlier from my boy Nicholas Hankel. Great content creator, by the way. You should check him out.
He's one of the only other NBA content
creators. One of the only other content creators. He does, in fact, have a podcast but it is not solely basketball either. Great podcast I listen to, Bun and Cardigan Show. It's amazing. But he was talking about how Chris Paul and how he was almost akin to, like, Mike D'Antoni in a way, and not solely, but in a
that's
way
a,
that
that's a very
but in a way
comparison.
That
I like
but in
that.
A way that his teams would always seem to max out in the regular season, and you had high hopes for the playoffs, and then by the time they got there, though, it seemed like everything fell apart one way or another, whether that was due to their schemes or how they played or just injuries or anything going on. He was talking about how, you know, the only time we really didn't see that happen was in 2018. When they had the Warriors on the brink before he got hurt, and say what you will about how any of that happened. But it's nice to see now that, yeah, this isn't – I mean, Chris Paul's team and this Suns team is just amazing. They're all playing great.
And not to take away – for some reason we haven't mentioned him yet is Booker. And this has been a great playoffs for guys that have been declared empty stat guys, which is a completely, like, ludicrous,
no such
like,
thing
label.
As empty stats, by the way.
Yeah. Booker has been really showing out, proving he's been proven top 20, top 15 player in the league.
Yeah.
And what he's been doing is impressive, earning Kobe comparisons. I know he's not that guy.
Slow down on that.
But, he is not Kobe. But with that said.
But he has that mentality.
Yeah, he definitely has that mentality. And I think overall, and this is literally every single series, just as a little wrap up, I think every single series Phoenix plays, it's never like the other team didn't do this or the opponent didn't do that. It's always what Phoenix does better. They just have a way. They can have the other team can have guys like Jokic who can like, and like LeBron who can like play literally like the best basketball they ever have. But just the way that Phoenix moves as a team, the way they utilize their bench and their starters and the way it all clicks together. It just
shout
like,
out Dario, by the way.
Shout out Frank Kaminsky, the GOAT. It just works. It just works in a perfect way.
Yeah.
Another thing too, though, about the Nuggets.
Yeah, go ahead.
I just wanted to kind of say this because, you know, I think a lot of people are saying, oh, you know, what about the Nuggets and what they've done? Or, I mean, I think the big thing here is that we knew this team was only going to go so far without Murray. He was playing it out of his mind,
and
both in the bubble and later in the season, he started to pick it back up again. And as great as their guys stepped up filling in, whether it be
and
Austin
that stretch
Rivers,
by Jokic after Murray was out was phenomenal.
Oh, it was amazing. And well, whether it be Austin Rivers, or Aaron Gordon, their guys stepping up, it couldn't be kept up long. I mean, I know Aaron Gordon kind of struggled in the playoffs this year, but I think there are moves that they can make with as it pertains to just like role players and stuff. But I think they have their core set. I mean, Porter Jr. is still doing what he's doing, and I think this team just needs to show up a few more things. But they're still going to be at the top no matter what.
And with that said, we are going to take a quick intermission break. This is the Silver's Cronies podcast. Don't go anywhere. We will be right back.
And we are back.
We are back. Still on the second episode, Silver's Cronies podcast. Hope you didn't go anywhere because we are about to get into my personal favorite segment, Jake Rants About the Sixers.
I wouldn't say a rant.
Ready.
I wouldn't say a rant.
Oh, it's going to be a rant.
This
you don't think it's going to be a rant, but it's going to turn into a rant.
I've never been more down bad, down atrociously.
We've all been down atrociously.
Because of a sporting event.
Ah.
Down stupendously.
Okay, so Jake kind of changed it up there. I thought he was going to say down bad atrociously in general. But yes, for a sporting event, I can understand.
Game 5. Game 7, I didn't take as bad as I thought I would because of game 5.
It was just a mere nail in the coffin you were already in.
Yes. Game 5 was the greatest meltdown I've ever seen.
Can you tell us the story?
And physically.
Set the scene.
The scene. I said this to Steve. The inanimate objects in my house were very lucky I was not home. I was in Florida with my family, watching the game in silence because everyone else was asleep. And the excruciating pain of not being able to scream and shout, I threw my mattress. Afterwards, I locked myself in the bathroom because I didn't have it in me to look another soul in the eyes after that. And I was expecting my family to say, it's more than just a game. They knew.
It's not a game, it's basketball. And as they say, knew. Ball is life.
This was worse than the Kawhi shot. Very much
they knew.
So.
Just like how they
I think,
knew.
And I think I understand why, because with the Kawhi shot, you were only expected to go up. This almost, I saw, I think it was a funky diabetic said, you know, the infamous play now from game 7, as we all know, the Ben Simmons pass out of the dunk to Thibault with the foul. He dubbed that as the moment the process died. And honestly, I think that's.
I think it's true.
As sad as that's very. I think it's extreme. I think that's exactly what it is. I think that is the moment that it truly did.
Yeah,
die.
I could agree with that sentiment.
But
I feel
also,
like the. But I will refute that claim is that the process died whenever they made the playoffs. The process was the rebuild. When they made the playoffs 3 or 4 years ago and played the
Heat. I think the problem, though, is that with the process, you know. Your goal isn't to make the playoffs here. You're not tanking for 4 years that badly.
You're right.
I also
just
think
to make the playoffs. You want to win a title.
This
was supposed to be the first test of if the process actually worked. Because like I think that's true because with the Kawhi shot, you really couldn't blame the Sixers. It was fate by like on a limb by literally one of the best people in the world at the game of basketball. I feel like the Sixers had more riding on them going into this playoffs. They were the undisputed one seed. They were one of the best undisputed players or undisputed teams in the whole league. And, you know, they had a lot riding on it. And I feel like this was a really make or break moment for, you know, what Hinkie built with the process and what Daryl Morey was going to be, you know,
furthering. I don't want to talk too much about the process, more the meltdown that occurred. Simmons, it pains me so much to see all the slander, and I'm not saying he doesn't deserve it because he deserves –
bring him to Minnesota.
He deserves every aspect of that slander. And it's not even about his lack of a three-point shot. At this point, he's able to succeed and be a championship-level player without three-point shot. It's his lack of aggressiveness in the post, where he is so skilled. And it's so frustrating to watch someone that I consider to be my favorite player.
It's not a lack of aggressiveness. It's just like
– to just disappear like
that. He just doesn't even want to be there.
No, he doesn't. It is a mental thing.
He doesn't look at the rim, and he admits it in his interviews. He's like, it's all mental. And I don't know. I don't want to get
yourself right.
I don't want to get into the reasons of that because it could be family issues. It could be whatever. And I feel like that's inappropriate for me to even say that. And I apologize. But I don't even know where to begin. And it looks like we're going into another offseason where we're playing the game. Oh, will this be the year where he finally gains his confidence and shoots jump shots? And a lot of people are looking for a trade. And people are throwing around names like CJ McCollum and
listen, I don't think a CJ trade is going to work. And because I was thinking this over today, a CJ trade doesn't make any sense from the standpoint. CJ has so much money that you're shipping off and you're getting so much money back in Ben Simmons.
I mean, CJ was just an example there.
But CJ is really the main name that I've seen been tossed around. And I really don't get the trade because it's like there's so much money going around and you're not going to have any scoring because yes, you're getting better defense and yes, you're getting better playmaking, but CJ still brings such a big scoring presence. Like in Portland, I don't like that.
I don't even want to take away from the Hawks because I can't even be mad at the Hawks. They're doing everything right as an underdog team. And I could only respect them for that.
But it's just,
and it's just inexcusable. You hold,
wish it wasn't
Steve, pull up the numbers, but they held Trae Young to what percentage shooting in Game 7 and lost at home?
He was at least one or like – he was like 2-for-14 from three.
That is inexcusable. Absolutely inexcusable and disgusting. And
because with that, like, yeah, they're stopping Trae Young, but – and this has happened time and time before with the Sixers in these playoffs. Hold on a second.
Trae Young was 5-for-23 from the field, 2-of-11 from three.
He was awful. And that is a lot –
he also had six turnovers.
A lot of that is due to Ben Simmons' mastery – of defense.
But that's the very thing. Like, so the Sixers will put all their effort, and this has happened time and time again. It happened with Giannis. It happened with
last year's Sixers.
Yeah, last year with – and it also happened last year with, you know, Kawhi. They put all their effort into one guy, but then you have the rest of these quote-unquote mastery defenders who aren't really doing their assignments well because all the pressure is being put on the star player. So that's how you get games where, like, Kevin Herter becomes, like, the next shooting messiah.
Shooting McWhite guy, yeah.
The other thing I saw, and I saw this being by Rusty Buckets today. He was talking about how the thing with Ben Simmons and free throws is that it's not just a problem of a mere, oh, you know, it's like Hack-a-Shack because he's somehow it's not really like that. Simmons, at least through the time, he was getting about 0.65 points per possession at the free throw line. If he took two shots, he was probably coming away with a little over half of a point, which would rank – if that was the offense, that would rank him as the worst offense in NBA history. Teams were really benefiting from Ben Simmons being at the free throw line. I mean, obviously we saw that. We know how that turned out. And I think that's just something you can't have. You know, the thing with Shaq was he was still hitting about half of the time. He was just over a point per possession.
And like even Shaq,
that's still a middle of the road offense.
Yeah.
And he also was saying, yeah, the difference there with Shaq is like he was
Shaq
70.
Shaq would do so much other stuff to kill you in the post.
Yeah,
like doesn't matter.
He was saying how Shaq's shot 70% from the rim.
I've become the Joker.
But if you're also a guy where, I mean, the thing with Simmons is he's not attacking the rim like Shaq. He doesn't have the offensive game that Shaq had. Shaq is one of the, if not one of the most dominant forces.
Why are we talking about
Shaq? And I guess
I'm trying to compare this issue to how big of an issue it is.
I think overall, before we jump to the next topic, you know, this wasn't the greatest 2-1 lead in NBA history.
I did declare that.
He did declare.
It felt like the biggest 2-1 lead because
I didn't want to bring it up until I had to.
Game three was so dominant. Everything was hitting. And a lot of it, I mean, Joel Embiid is to blame here a little bit, but there was only so much he could do because he was playing on a torn meniscus. Yeah. And as a center.
Even then he was still extremely dominant.
And as Joel Embiid, as a center, you cannot be.
You can't blame Joel.
You can't be a primary ball.
You can't possibly blame Embiid there. Even though he was playing injured, it didn't seem like he was.
No, and
I mean, there were moments where, yes, it seemed like his athleticism.
He was not great.
I mean, it seemed like, I mean, you could tell at points there, like his athleticism and bursts were, he was hobbled. But, I mean, the way he was playing, I'm not going to blame Embiid for anything. He was amazing this whole series. You wouldn't really have known he was injured.
Game four, he was not good.
But if they would have gotten swept if it wasn't for Embiid. So I'm not going to blame Embiid here. Yes, it was great, but who was great for the Sixers in Game 4? Nobody. That's the point. You can't blame Embiid. He was great this series. The thing, though, I think the Sixers have to end this. You can't keep trotting Simmons and Embiid out there. It's been what was this?
And I could only hope and pray for a guy like Damian Lillard. I mean,
I don't know what the return for Simmons will be, but they have to try something different. They can't keep
maybe
going
a nice
back
haul
to
of second round picks.
So Jake, you're a Sixers fan here. Looking back, would you rather kept Markelle Fultz and traded away Simmons, or would you have liked it still how it turned out?
I mean, they would be worse with Fultz. I mean, I don't think they could have still developed
Fultz without like the shadow of Simmons there.
Fultz was such an anomaly, and we still don't know what Fultz is.
Yeah, I still think he's going to be something great. I thought that was a pretty.
I mean, we don't know what Fultz is. He showed signs of what he could be on the Magic very briefly this year before his injury cut his season tragically short. But I mean, Simmons, late January, early February, Simmons was the best Ben Simmons we've ever seen. One of the key games, the Utah game, he had 42.
Yeah.
Entirely aggressive the entire time.
Entirely aggressive.
Sorry.
A little interruption. Outside interruption.
He showed signs this season of what he could be, and he's a three-time All-Star for a reason, but every year in the playoffs, other than last year because he was injured, can't fault him for that, he becomes a shell of himself, embarrassingly so, and that's not going to fly. Yeah. And I don't know where they go from here. I do have trust in Morey, which is – kind of my saving grace here. Mm-hmm. But what do they do? Do they trade him for a guy like guys like Brogdon and TJ Warren? Or do they try to get a package of Thibault, Maxi Simmons, try to get a guy like Lillard?
Yeah, this is definitely a make or break off season for the Sixers. So you guys listen to Jake go on a little rant. It's time to listen to me go on a little rant.
Before we do that, I want to make note here. Not only was Simmons a fighter, what the fuck is Doc Rivers doing? He went 10 deep in game 7. You can't do that. As talented as those guys on the Sixers are, you can't do that.
I'm surprised we didn't see Mike Scott out there.
Yeah, that is incredible. We didn't really touch a lot on that. I thought we had to make note of it. Doc Rivers was horrendous in this series. Just what he was doing, minimal adjustments. He was playing way too deep in his rotation. You can't keep trotting bench guys out there. Every single time he brought out the bench lineup, the Sixers lost their lead or got a bigger deficit. And he just can't do that. He was awful this series.
Other than Maxi for a couple short spurts and Shake Milton in game 2, the bench was atrocious.
It was terrible.
If I were the Sixers and if I wasn't looking to trade Simmons, let's say trading Simmons is off the table, I think that's the main form of improvement. Just trying to figure out what they're gonna do with, you know, their bench. How are they gonna improve it? Are they gonna, because they do have pieces like B-Ball Paul and Maxi. You know, they have some good guys, but like
playoff A.
Just in total, man, the bench. So With that being said,
I'll let you go on a rant without interrupting to talk about some asinine subject like Shaq.
All right, so
talk
Brooklyn.
About your so bandwagon Brooklyn. Team, the Nets.
No, okay, listen. You can't call me a Nets bandwagon. You can't. You can't. So little do you know, I've been a fan of the Nets since the dark days. First game my dad ever took me to was a Brooklyn Nets game back with, Darren Williams, Brooke Lopez, all those guys. Of course, you know how I came to a falling out with Brooke Lopez, and it pains me even more that Brooke Lopez and the Bucks single-handedly destroyed the Nets, but you can't be mad at them. If anyone's going to come out of the East, I'm glad it's Giannis. I'm glad he has a potential to, get his first ring. But, man, Brooklyn, especially with this Brooklyn team, because the Brooklyn team with, D'Lo and Jared Allen, that was a group of guys that I was really excited to see, continue to develop and continue to grow together. And even though Kyrie, KD, they're all still there, part of me has always kind of just still been like, what if? Like, what if they could have stayed together? What if, Kenny Atkinson didn't get the boot because he wasn't what Kyrie and Kevin wanted, And I feel like times like these really show it, because it's just a Nets team. They have they have Jeff Green, all-time good player, all-time really solid role player. Kevin Durant, one of, if not the greatest basketball player in the world right now. You have James Harden, you have Kyrie Irving, and I get the injuries, but also they had so many specialist guys that like Joe Harris and Bruce Brown. It's just like it in every single way you want to root for a team, but they give, but they like they break your heart and they just make you give up on them every single time you put hope. And then that's what I felt about this Nets team.
Because if there's one word to describe the Nets this year, it's been likable.
Listen, Bruce Brown, really good, really solid role player. He did, I know. Bruce Brown, really solid role player. He would literally do any, he's one of those guys. They had a lot of guys who would just do anything you asked them to as a coach. I didn't like the moves that they made this season. I knew as soon as they traded Jared Allen away, that center spot was going to come back to haunt them. And, turns out you can't play a rookie or – I think he's a sophomore. I think he's Nicholas Claxton.
He's a sophomore.
Yeah, sophomore. He didn't have any experience last year, so you can't expect him to utterly be able to guard guys like Brooke Lopez, who this is like their 10th year in the league or something, I don't get it. I want to like this Brooklyn team, but they're making it really hard on me. And I get the injuries, but James Harden also kind of with the injury still just completely up and vanished in the playoffs. And, Kyrie, it would have been a completely different story with him there.
I'm a Harden supporter.
I don't think you can.
You cannot fault him for going out there and trying to play.
I've been pretty
indifferent. I don't fault him for going out there and trying to play, but,
I mean, who's better in this situation, though? Harden or Mike Scott?
Harden.
Rather have a Harden with one leg.
I'd rather have Harden.
You can kind of see
catching strays.
Podcast. I've been fairly, I guess, indifferent to Harden in the past couple of years, and I don't think you can. It's in the past couple of years, Jake. Wow. But you can't fault him for going out there on one leg. He was clearly injured. He tried testing his shot. That never worked. And later in games, I kind of came to a fault. But he did recognize that he was better suited as a playmaker here. And he did great in that. He was great as a playmaker.
Giannis stepped up. And I will contest that he's the best player in the world. And he proved why. And say what you want about his free throws and his three-point shooting, whatever.
He dominated.
That stretch after games 1 and 2, he puts up 33-14, 34-12, 34-12, 30-17, and 40-13.
And I'm pretty sure that was all so on. Dominant. And I'm pretty sure that was all on very, very efficient shooting, because Giannis also what he does almost better than anyone, which is honestly after that series, I know I said Kevin Durant's the best player in the world, but honestly, Giannis is right there at my number two right now. Because he, unlike a lot of other really good players, he takes very efficient shots. He takes shots that he knows he'll make, and he takes shots that he knows will punish the defense the most.
And that game six game, I believe, that was one of the best, if not the best, Giannis performance I've ever seen. And he didn't shoot a single three that game.
And it proves that, it's not all about the three-pointer still. Like, you can still have guys who can still dominate from largely the post, and you can still have teams – built around guys that can dominate largely from the post. And honestly, if it's Nets or Hawks coming out of the East, I'm still high on the Nets.
You're still in denial.
I'm very much in denial. But okay, so if it's Bucks or Hawks coming out in the East, and if I had to pick one that I'd be confident could beat the Suns or could at least contest with the Suns, I would pick the Bucks.
The only thing holding them back is their shoddy coaching.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they have the perfect role players. It's a shame Dante DiVincenzo is out. I know you hate him, Steve.
I do.
You little Wolverine.
But he was a he is a great role player for them. He knows what to do. And he's a great he's a great glue guy for them.
It would have been interesting to see how they used him because he has been a great defensive anchor for them off the bench.
Yeah.
And I have to give Brooke Lopez some credit
He
hasn't been all that great.
Yeah.
It's been Middleton who's really stepped up.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that more when we talk about the conference finals in another episode. But Middleton has really stepped up. Guys like Bryn Forbes stepping up. I mean, I love Bobby Portis.
Yes,
he should have been a sixth man of the year candidate.
He should have.
And I mean, I love what they're doing. I keep saying that I don't really have a preference on who wins the finals, but it would be really cool to see Giannis get a ring.
I want
to
make a side note with Giannis's free throws here. And I've noticed this more in the Eastern Conference Finals games than the ones I did in the semis here. But Mill mini conspiracy. Do you think that the fans counting out the doing a count, you know, 1, 2, 3, all the way up to whatever number you really set, do you think that helps them? Because honestly, I think it does. I think that Giannis is actually getting a rhythm from this. If you notice, he takes his dribbles at the same time. He's always releasing whenever they count at about 12.
You might have a point.
Man. I think it definitely helps.
And I've seen fans say, like, fans who were at the Barclays Center, like, kind of, like, they realized, I don't know if it was, like, game five. What game it might have been.
That
it might have been five
working.
Or seven. I think it was game five they were talking about how the fans started to realize that, the count isn't really working. It's actually helping Giannis because – I mean, I think the thing, and this is a big thing with three throws. It's a lot, very rhythm based. If you get your routine, you're going to be pretty good at it. And I think that Giannis, a lot of times when he gets in these free throw things, he's thinking about it far too much. I think he's thinking about these far too much. That gets him a rhythm that he knows when the time is dribbles. He's always releasing about 12, and if he releases at a different time, the shot usually ends up being pretty poor. So I just think it's a little mini conspiracy. It might not matter at all, but I just think it's always kind of fun to notice. He definitely seems to be trying to time it at the same time. Whether it's helping, I don't know. But he definitely seems to be finding a rhythm. I don't still know if it's helping.
That's definitely the most provocative thing that has been said on this podcast in its very short lifespan.
Yes.
The more thought-provoking. So, that's a wrap-up for Nets Bucks. We're going to get into some talks about the offseason and coach changes and stuff right after this quick little break.
Specifically, Steve needs to get in this hot spot here with NBA draft lottery.
So we're going to take another quick little break. We'll catch you guys when we come back. And we are back. Yes, sir. You are listening again to the Silver's Cronies podcast. In case you forgot, but how can you? We are the only NBA podcast on the internet. I hope all our loyal listeners grab some popcorn because we are about
to
get
water
into some very
potty break
juicy topics.
This is a pro hydration podcast,
very much so.
So let's talk about the fact that literally almost every NBA, it felt like almost every NBA team lost their coach. I think the most notable one really was Terry Stotts with the Blazers. Terry Stotts.
Yeah, I guess so.
Because that was really the one that people were looking at, you know, what they were going to do after that exit.
And I think many expected him to go, but it's a shock because he was there for so long. He helped build that team up.
And also, he was Damian Lillard's coach. It's like, you know, you have in NBA history these coaches who form these strong bonds with these players, and sometimes their removal can mean good things, and sometimes their removal can mean bad things.
And in this era of, like, player first, player empowerment,
which I'm for,
you
by
really,
the way.
You really
we are all here for.
Of course. You have to walk that fine line because now with the way they handled the Chauncey Billups hiring and the fan backlash to it, it might lead to Damian Lillard like final days in Portland.
We already know that Nurkic said, he's like, if Dame's gone, I'm gone. And then you have to think that, you know, those guys like the GOAT, Zach Collins, would be gone too. Because, you know, he's a guy that Portland needs to sign.
He's a glue guy for them.
He is. And I hope, and little tangent, I hope he can get back and I hope he can prove, you know, all the haters and all the doubters wrong, because he is, honestly, at times was the best.
Also, yeah. Shout out to his hair gel for sponsoring
his hair gel for sponsoring our first episode. But, you know, man, like, there are times where he was the best rim protector on the Blazers, and just hope, I wish you well, Big Z, Big G Easy from your number one fan, because I know you listen to this podcast.
Yeah, I mean, it's the only NBA podcast.
I think the biggest coaching, I guess, shock to put it, as Carlisle stepping down for the Mavericks.
That came out of nowhere.
Rumors of that. He came out. And then, yeah.
And then going to Indiana.
Because I don't think you can blame that
going loss back to the Clippers where he already was before. Because he was there right after he left the Pistons in the early 2000s. He went there. So he's making a return to Indianapolis. And that was fairly quick.
And that's a team that's going to be really, really scary, because they have the right pieces. So they just had a really bad coaching player situation.
Yes.
And, you know, Rick Carlisle is one of those guys who
– he's a very good coach.
He is an incredibly
underrated coach.
He's up there, man. He's one of the best.
And the Mavs are a mess, right? No one knows what's happening with them.
Yeah, I mean, we all know, listen, Luka's not going to be going anywhere in the short term. He's going to sign the max extension.
But getting a generational talent like Luka and making him unhappy is not the best strategy.
He'll stick it out for at least the next couple of years. You know, I don't see him leaving there. He's going to sign the big contract because he can get the most money from Dallas. And
the Supermax, man. Who wouldn't? Anthony Davis.
I think he has to wait for the Supermax. You can only get the rookie level max.
Can he?
Yeah. He can't get the Supermax.
Well, saying that he stays there and tries to get the Supermax.
But I mean, we know they hired Jason Kidd, who has proven pretty much everywhere else he was that he failed upwards. Probably his best stop was in what was his best coaching job? I mean, like,
none of them.
Winning
none
the
of them.
Well, I mean, just saying, like, what was his best thing as a coach? Winning again in the first his round.
His best thing
against
as
Toronto,
a coach was
getting to the playoffs with Milwaukee. I mean,
was like holding back Giannis. Yeah. Like, congratulations, Jason Kidd.
And then they hire. I mean, I don't want to speak bad about the guy because I don't know much about.
No, speak bad about him.
No, he's not Jason Kidd. I'm a different person. They hired a GM. Honestly, I have to look. I'm saying, I'm sorry. But I know he worked with Nike. I mean, he was in the realms of a lot of players.
Wait,
but
you mean
the
Mavs?
Yeah, they're new.
I didn't actually know that GM hire.
They're new. I don't know if it was
Nico Harrison.
Yeah.
Nico, I've never heard of him.
He was with Nike. I know he had a lot of, like, he was with a lot of players. Or, like, he was in
you know, man, at this point, whatever.
It's just weird that's your first basketball job. I don't know if it's GM or like
people.
He's in the front office. It's just weird to have a first basketball.
We're living in a weird time.
The Associated Press says GM.
Okay,
we're living in a weird time. You know, like, no one thought Steve Nash would be a good coach, and, you know, look, here he is. He had a pretty solid first
outing. It's hard not to be good coach with the guys.
Okay,
Jake,
we get it.
This isn't Nash slander.
Butthurt Sixers fan.
Also, the other thing, speaking of unhappy stars, seems like Zion might very quickly want out of New Orleans.
I think that's –
he's going to have his third coach. He's going to have his third coach in 3 years. That's not something you want with a young star.
I don't think it's something you want, but I think the reports that he wants out
– I don't know.
It's one of those
– I mean, I'd imagine –
we need to look at the source because reports that were coming out about Damian Lillard wanting to leave – we're coming from a Clippers beats writer. So if you're a Portland Trailblazers fan, do you really trust a Clippers writer with your Portland Trailblazers news? It's just like
Chris Haynes reported that Lillard might want
out.
Haynes reported it too.
It does seem what I'm seeing is that the leading candidate to replace Van Gundy in New Orleans is Jacques Vaughn.
It should be
who did a very good job with the Nets.
It should be Kenny Atkinson. Why does nobody want to give Kenny Atkinson another head coaching job?
I don't think that's
necessary. He was my original pick to be the Pelicans, and he is going to be my pick to be the Pelicans again. You need to look at this guy's resume. Look at what he did with guys like D'Angelo Russell, what he did to propel the careers of guys like Jared Allen. He has proven himself to be a very good player development coach, and I just feel like being an assistant coach – isn't really what he's meant to do. I think he's meant to be a coach, of a really good coach of a really good NBA team.
That would be interesting because you brought up Jared Allen. I think Jackson Hayes is someone who's very similar. And
Jackson Hayes and
has that similar type of potential, and I think he could be exciting in a system like that.
And I also think Willie Hernan Gomez is going to be very exciting. Because,
sure.
Well, listen, man. At the end of the season, he was averaging 11-11 as the starting center on pretty solid shooting for someone who's not really been used to that starting center minutes. I think he should be up there. I'm not sure if Jackson Hayes is a free agent. Is Jackson Hayes an upcoming free agent? Because if he is, he should definitely be on their radar.
He shot a killer 10% from three, Willie Hernan Gomez.
He's not a three-point shooter. You need to look at.
He shot five.
You need to look at his.
I was looking at 2-point attempts. My bad. Yeah, you're right. He's not a 3-point shooter.
You need.
I was just trying to be mean. Yeah. I'm salty that the Sixers lost.
Like, I think Willie Hernan Gomez and Jackson Hayes, if Jackson Hayes is a free agent, they should be definitely.
He's restricted anyways.
Yeah, but they should still be very. They should definitely look
to keep them. A player that does intrigue me is Kira Lewis Jr. because he has that raw athleticism. I'm into players
he's
like that.
He's a prospect type player, definitely.
That have that raw athleticism, and he could be under the right coach, a very exciting player.
Under Kenny Atkinson.
Big thing for the Pelicans too is what they did with Lonzo Ball this offseason. We know there are reports that he'd want a max extension, and the Pelicans don't want that. We'll just see what they do with him. He definitely seemed to take a big step.
He took a leap
this year, especially with his shooting, just facilitating as a whole. Everything, he just took a big step. Having him, Ingram, and Zion would be a pretty good trio to have. If Hayes or Hernan Gomez took a next step, just bringing another guard. It just – this team could be some.
I don't know how bold of a take that is. I think that core could win a championship.
With the right guys around them.
I mean, you know I'm a Zion fan. I mean, that's –
with
that's
Kenny
how
Atkinson,
high,
yeah, they can.
That's how high I am on Zion and Lonzo. A lot about, like, Ingram. Ingram is Ingram. But, do we want to move on? Have we covered all the coaching changes?
We covered all the ones that we really care
about.
Because
we're the only NBA podcast.
That matter to us.
Let's move on. This is your time, Steve. You've been waiting for this moment for years.
And years.
Decades.
Cade Cunningham is coming.
Draft lottery occurred.
To Detroit. Cade Cunningham is coming to Motown. We are back.
Should have been Mini.
We are going to be killer.
Okay,
I cannot speak bad about the lottery gods for a long time now, and by that I mean for a year.
They gave you what you wanted.
Pistons finally moved up with their own draft pick. Ben Wallace didn't need any luck. He said he with all the hard work he did, only good things can happen. And boy, was he right. I saw memes going around about how Ben Wallace might go up to Mark Tatum and say, "Listen, give me the first pick or else," because he's Ben Wallace. And you know what? That may have happened. By the way, no, I don't think that the draft lottery is currently rigged.
It is.
But shout out
Mark Tatum. We got to see him twice a year. Adam Silver lets him out of his cage. And he gets to see
Lord,
the draft lottery.
Mark Tatum.
Our gracious God up above, Adam Silver, because we are the Silver. We are Adam Silver's cronies. Right. We would never speak bad about our Lord, our devout Savior, Adam Silver. However.
Yeah.
All right,
the generosity showed by him to let Mark out of his cage to do the draft
was just amazing
and
inspiring
to see Mark's smiling face speak in the same robotic tone that he's spoken for the last however long he's
and
been doing
I that. Saw for a lot of my fellow Piston fans on Twitter, the big thing that we were worried about is seeing Mark Tatum's smile holding the Pistons at about at position 5 or 6. because everybody knows, or if you don't know, just go look up the draft lottery. Just watch any of the picks, and you'll see every time Mark Tatum takes the team out of the envelope, he has that smile on his face as he announces your team, and the hopes and dreams of many fan bases die. This time, I received a good ending. It was nice to be on that end of the stick for once.
Just like Minnesota when we got Anthony Edwards.
And the Pistons, are going to be.
It's always about me.
The Pistons are going to be good. You know, they already have two guys who made all rookie teams with Sadiq Bey and Isaiah Stewart. Jeremy Grant took a big step this year into being an all-star caliber player. I don't think many unbiased people, even my unbiased takes, thought he would be an all-star. But I think if even a little leap, he could take that step. Cunningham should be amazing. He's going to be the pick here. Any doubts they've had, Weaver has made slight hints that
and
that
we Cade's might have on the pod at some point. One of our friends, Ryan, is a known Cade Cunningham hater.
No, we might Cade have a Cunningham debate. Hater.
And
we might no, have a debate if, about, and, you know, if Cade Cunningham is good or not, and if he can be, you know, the guy.
Be good. I think he'll be fine.
I think he'll be good
after, but after, and
I think he will be good too. I think yeah. I agree with you that he is the undisputed number one pick. Yeah. But
and then Killian Hayes played great after his injury last year. I think that they'll be a fun team to watch. They're going to be good. But other
playoff team question mark.
They could be. I could see them challenging for like a play-in spot years. Next year. They could challenge for a play-in spot.
I'd give them two, 3 years.
If Kate kind of does, you know, like see like what Jaw did like last year with their playing. I think yeah. it could be similar to that situation. If he plays at that level. They already have a nice core established.
Do you think Dwayne Casey's the guy
for now? Yes. Listen,
for whenever
I know,
they're contending.
Whenever yeah. they're contending, I don't know. I'd rather stick with Dwayne Casey for now because, I mean, I'm a Dwayne Casey guy. I've always liked him, you know, dating back to Toronto whenever. He's already great with young yeah. guys. He develops players.
I'll never forget I'm not, listen, during our I'm not football think, lifting whenever we had to stop because I had to show you Dwayne Casey's
right.
press conference.
No, that was the Blake Griffin trade. Different.
I think we did it for
Dwayne
both.
Casey, Dwayne Casey presser, I was at home.
I think we did it for
no,
both.
I was at home.
A Pistons fan would remember that.
I was at home. I was in my family room. No, but I'm not going to be ready to think about them. Who's going to be the coach contending? Because I'd rather see him get to that step first. I think Dwayne Casey will be the guy for that. He's great at developing players. He already did a great job last year. One of the best rebuilding, quote unquote, tanking seasons in the NBA history, right there. Oh yeah! Oh yes! Oh yes! It was. We didn't have to do it for 4 years, Jake. We only got. Look, we did it for one
All
year.
All I'm saying is
we lost
out.
The right way.
Watch
we
out
beat
when,
good teams.
Watch
we
out when Anthony Edwards takes the Minnesota Timberwolves to be getting
also
swept in four
you.
In the first.
We're talking
round.
About the draft lottery in which the Timberwolves do not have a pick.
Yes,
but so you know
I,
what?
I did
we will
go
soon
to,
be talking about the offseason in which Minnesota will acquire Ben Simmons.
I did want to go to the other winners and losers.
Anthony Edwards will look cute in
we,
the Sixers.
We need to talk about some other winners
Never.
And losers of
the
draft
Thunder
lottery
got
here.
Gypped.
Thank
they did.
God.
I was kind of I was hoping like what if no. we lived in a strange reality where the Thunder like got 6-1-3
which was possible and my delusional brother who is a Thunder fan
I think it would have been 1-4 I think it was a top three protected
yeah I'm
the look on my brother's face yeah. was priceless when I told him the Thunder got the sixth pick nothing else because he like, had himself sold that they'd get two top five picks.
The sixth pick still isn't terrible like it's
but
a good
I think
jumping
the
off
the problem
point.
Though is that in this draft look we know of all the teams this year it was pretty obvious that the Thunder were the ones that were actively tanking the Rockets sucked the
it
Pistons,
was shameful
the Pistons just sucked
also
I mean the Cavs and after the trade deadline the Magic
what?
Just sucked because they blew it up the Thunder
what?
Were
also Minnesota just sucked.
Yeah.
Okay.
The yeah. Thunder were actively tanking. It was very clear.
I
they were
make
resting
comment about the
any
process.
Good player they no. had. They were resting. I mean, Al Horford. They were resting and listed him as because he was old. I mean, they were just they were resting guys. Any guy that was winning them a game, they rested. They were basically shut down for the year. And the only reason that they weren't higher was because Poku was just playing insane down
yeah.
the stretch and
our
one
boy
of
lost and unbound.
Yeah.
Our boy we.
So,
he has been found.
Now, that was it was very nice to
nice.
See that the lottery gotcha. Gods were not rewarding them for a very shameful tank job.
Yeah.
Also, I mean, Golden State Warriors here, big winners, while the Timberwolves are losers. I'm sure James is very happy about that.
Yep.
Because that was a top three, top five
it was.
Protected pick.
Basically, if it was 1-3, it was going to go to Minnesota.
Yeah, so top
4-3, 10,
pick.
It would have fell to the Warriors, which it did. But, you know. I'd rather still have Anthony Edwards. I love Anthony Edwards. I think he's going to be a really good player.
I do, too. And I think he got gypped for Rookie of the Year.
Yeah.
That's a conversation for another day.
If you want to see me cry on the pod, talk to me about that.
Yeah.
And this is a spot where the Warriors, though, can use this. I mean, there have already been rumors about packages of including Wiseman and either
today,
their seven
Wiseman
and
the seventh pick
and
for,
14 pick.
Siakam.
Yeah, I saw there are a lot of rumors. I mean, I don't think many know what's going to happen with that, but – That definitely is something. If they wanted to get another star, they can. If they wanted to get young guys, they can.
Another thing is Houston. Houston's a bit of a wild card here because we know pretty much Cade Cunningham's going to Detroit. Houston could do many things.
Yeah, it's probably between Jalen Green or Mobley for them. I don't see Suggs going at two.
I see Jalen Green because, you know, Mobley, maybe they like what they have going on with Christian Wood, and maybe they want to play him at some small ball center.
I mean, even if you put, if you got Mobley, you could put him at the small ball four. He can hit the three.
I do think Silas has the chance to be a great coach.
I think Mobley's main thing right now is just putting on some muscle.
I mean, I think that's the one thing with a big man. We know. I mean, this happens a lot of guys. It takes years for them to develop. I mean, you saw Giannis took him. Yeah, it took Giannis a few years to get his muscle up.
We'll see with Wiseman.
Not a big man, but Kevin Durant too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it takes a little bit of time for them to get that. So if you're willing, I mean, I think the Rockets will be willing to wait for that. I don't think that they're necessarily going to be.
And then what will happen with one of my favorite players, John Wall? This is Rockets. All I know is we started the right off season to start this podcast at, because it's going to be a very interesting off season coming up.
The Chicago Bulls.
They got.
It's just sad at this point. Yeah.
They're. Pick went to Orlando, who I think is incredibly interesting because they have a very underrated Wendell Carter
underrated
Jr.
rebuild.
Yeah, Wendell Carter Jr. I think
a lot
can
of
be
questions.
A fantastic player.
It was nice to see him finally blow it up when everybody knew they had to as well.
Cole Anthony was remarkable.
I love Jonathan Isaac. I'm huge on Jonathan Isaac, and I hope for him to get healthy.
We'll see if Mo Bamba could take that step.
He seemed to show some flashes this year. It was nice to see.
Yeah,
he's had a few great moments there.
And one of the undisputed protagonists of basketball, Markel Fultz.
Yes.
Everyone is rooting for him.
I think every single soul that likes the game of basketball was
wants Markel to do
out.
Good.
Including Sixers fans. And I got a lot of comments. Not I, but like.
Sixers fans.
Sixers got a lot of comments at the beginning of the year like.
Jeez, they have Otto Porter.
They do have Otto. Must be so upset Markel's playing well. No,
they got him in the trade.
Yeah, I forgot
Sixers
about
fans
that.
Are happy for Markel. Everyone wants to see Markel succeed because what he went through was so rare and so stupid that, like, you can't help but feel bad for him.
And also, I think here, though, I mean, the Magic are in a good spot because they have picks 5 and 8. They can work with those. If they can take two very good young guys, they're probably slotted to get Kuminga. There's a few other guys that might go down.
I think Kuminga's going to be one of the
Patrick Williams type
really
pick.
Good. Yeah, he's going to be one of the sleeper picks that you see. He won't be good instantly, but he'll develop.
He's seen as a project, but there's a lot of raw skill there. I mean, for a team like the Magic, they're clearly not ready to contend anytime soon. They're probably going to get a few more guys before they're ready. I think that they're a team that can definitely take on a longer-term project.
And hopefully, he shows that maybe, like, this G League project is actually something that other players can look to. Because I do think it's a very interesting and a very step in the right direction for, just continually empowering young athletes.
And I think undisputed winner probably this lottery is the Raptors.
Yeah.
Moving up to the fourth pick. I think they were the eighth. They were slotted to be in the eighth pick, and they moved up to four.
I was convinced that it was going to be rigged. Not rigged. Sorry, Adam. for the Raptors to get Cade Cunningham.
Yeah. Story of this offseason is really going to be these bottom lottery teams and what they do with these picks and like the trades.
The Raptors are interesting because like Siakam definitely like regressed, and like
I think it was only towards
Lowry,
the beginning of the year.
Lowry's done in.
It's likely
Toronto.
That Lowry's gone.
Hopefully
to Philly. You have to love
hopefully
Kyle Lowry.
It's going to be I think Philly
or Minnesota
or Miami
or Minnesota.
There's a few teams. I mean, but that's something.
Depending
on
what they do with D-Lo.
That's something that honestly though they definitely need it after this year. For them it's good. It gives them some. They're gonna get a good player if they don't like trade out of that or move up. But I don't see them trading out of it.
Me neither. I see them just taking a player.
Yeah. It's likely would be Suggs.
If they're lucky, they
could get Jalen Green if he falls.
I think if they take Suggs. I think if Suggs is available and they take him, it's definitely the end of Kyle Lowry's tenure.
I don't think necessarily. I mean, I think Kyle Lowry's done. But even if they take him,
trade is probably their best
route. It's probably going to be a sign and trade. So that way he can get the money that he wants as well.
I hope Lowry comes to Minnesota.
To wrap things up, we haven't talked about the team with the third pick, the Cavs. They're
just the Cavs are
the Cavs. It's weird. Are they going to pay Sexton, which – he definitely, you can't say he doesn't deserve an extension.
But, how much does he deserve?
Yeah, the vibes are
and
off.
And Kevin Love's money is just going to haunt them until he gets up and out of there.
It's going to haunt Kevin Love that he's stuck there.
And Jared Allen's going to want money. It's a weird.
And it's a bad situation for Cleveland because they don't really have any, unlikable players.
Jared Allen.
Unlikable players. Jared Allen, yeah, he's great.
I've seen Jared Allen be something though. If
Darius Mobley, Garland took a step,
if the Rockets were to take Jalen Green at two, you'd imagine that Mobley would be the pick, and that could be the end of Jared Allen at Cleveland. They might want to move on and not have to pay him a big contract if they were going to take Mobley.
Yeah,
very much I think so. It's going to be something to watch. That's why the Rockets are a big wild card. Whatever they do could really impact what happens later in – not even just in the draft, but just in that early lottery.
Rockets should have – they should have kept on to Jared Allen.
Yeah, I mean, I think people know that at this point. Much rather would have, like, Caris LeVert and Jared Allen than
– I mean, I could talk for hours about the Harden trade.
Yeah. That's pretty much well known. But, yeah, I think that is something that not a lot of people are really seeing right now, that Jared Allen isn't necessarily just – is going to be a piece in Cleveland, because if they do get Mobley – Cavs might want to move on from him. They don't. They probably won't want to pay him, especially if they either do pay Sexton or if they get something else for him.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. And, we're done.
So
yeah. So because Jake knows what I was going to say next, and Harden trade, and
yeah,
we're done. I think the Sixers bias and Jake is coming
we're
out.
We're done.
But So with that said,
been through hell.
This has been a stressful podcast for Jake, and we're going to do him a favor and let him go. Thank you for listening to this podcast. We're growing every day.
Don't forget that we love you. One of our listeners.
Every one of our listeners. So grateful. Even, you know, got 22 plays, I think, on the first episode. 22 more than we thought we'd ever get. Just share this.
Million.
If we can ask one thing, share this podcast with your friends, with your folks, with whoever you want. See you guys next time. This is the Silver's Cronies podcast. Signing off.
Keep on balling.
Keep on balling.